This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
Yoo-hoo, that's me. Here we are at the end of August. It's the 30th of August, 2009. The decade is crashing down around me. I don't know. I feel older with time passing by all the more quickly. But maybe today's topic will help me a little bit as we talk about children and childhood, and I'll have flashbacks to my fun of playing in the yard. We're going to talk with Kate White, who is a national project. And your mother told me to say that. Kate White, a nature-based education teacher. Let me turn on all the buttons. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks.
See, that's got to work. We'll keep playing with the buttons. We're also going to talk with Jim Duncan. Somebody please give me some alcohol to clean out my tongue. Jim Duncan, a realtor with Nest Realty. Jim?
Morning, Rick.
And good morning to you, sir. Let me give a shout-out to those listening on Lynchburg's 89.9 for being with us today and remind everyone that it is a movie choice weekend here at WNRN with your chance to win tickets for new movies at Stanton's Visualite Cinemas, Charlottesville's Vinegar Hill Theater, or any Regal Cinema. So stay tuned today on WNRN. And we'll also give a shout-out to Salad Creations for supporting us today. You can find them at 110 5th Street, Charlottesville, just off the east end of the downtown mall. At Salad Creations, you can choose from a variety of vegetarian salads or those made with chicken, turkey, and seafood. You can create your own from 4 varieties of greens, 40 toppings, and over a dozen dressings. Delivery and catering also available at Salad Creations. You can find them online at saladcreations.net. All right. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. I think you're going to just want to jump right into the conversation today because it's an interesting topic. Healthy children and how healthy children are best created by participating in nature. Did I get any of that right, Kate?
Yeah, that's a great start.
Yeah, good. All right, well, let's clear away the first 2 minutes of the program then. And Kate, your background a little bit, I sort of made it nice and trivial by saying nature-based teacher, but there's so much more.
Yeah, what are you asking? A little bit about my history,
yes,
my story?
Yes, a little bit about your history.
What my training is. Well, in nature-based education, I have kind of an eclectic training. I have a training, what they call nature-based education or mentoring in nature connection. And I came to nature sort of on my own as a kid, growing up here in Charlottesville, just like many, many children, many adults, many people. But when I had my own children is when I started to really focus on learning how to teach nature. And I had a two-year-old boy named William. It was very boisterous and loving and just I thought the world of him. So I wanted him to have what I had, which was just playing outside in the natural world. So I went and I got educated in a kind of education called wilderness education, wilderness awareness. They have a school out in Seattle, near Seattle, called the Wilderness Awareness School. And they had several satellite schools around the nation. So I ended up going and taking their satellite class called the Art of Mentoring. This has quite a history in our culture and in many cultures where there's people who are out there who know about the natural world and just sort of naturally lead children into building close connections with their environment. And they do it in a very quiet way, in a very playful way. I learned a lot about playing games and being able to be out there and just naturally learn instead of sitting in a class or reading a book.
So you got into this because of your own children?
My own children, yeah. I wanted to create just a little play group for my kid. So I went and I learned the art of mentoring, which is really not sort of being in the classroom, but being outside. We call it the invisible classroom, actually.
And so we're going to talk about how nature plays a very important and possibly lost or forgotten role in the growth and important, not just mental, but physical part of children today. And Jim Duncan is here because Charlottesville has a community, the Belvedere community, which has created itself around some of these these goals and efforts. And modern real estate plays a part in what we're doing here. And so Jim is on the program with us today, our long-time friend of Wake Up Call, Jim Duncan from Nest Realty, to talk about the role that his field plays in this.
Well, in my world, I'm seeing a real trend towards people returning to nature, and they want to interact with it. And we're seeing it in the Central Virginia area. Belvedere is one of the newer developments, but we're also seeing a longstanding one in Greene County, Farm Colony, where people interact with, you know, it's a working farm. People interact with that on a daily basis, and that's seen a sort of resurgence over the years. In Bundoran Farm down in southern Albemarle as well, has gotten a lot of national attention. So it's not just the smaller communities, but it's also the developments within are being developed by people who want to really encourage nature and interaction.
Kate, you live in this community called Belvedere, but for many people, it's not overly talked about, I think, on the street corner or by the water cooler kind of thing. Tell people what we're discussing. What is Belvedere? Where is Belvedere?
Well, that's a really great question, and thanks for asking, Rick. And actually, it's really great to be on the show here with Jim Duncan, because he's the reason why I'm in Belvedere. And I moved down here from Vermont, where I had a healing arts center up there that combined nature-based education with healing arts, and I wanted to move back home. So we found Jim through his blog, his real estate blog, realcentralva.com, and I sat down with him, and he you know what he did? He went through my whole website, and he said, you know what, I looked you over, and I think you'd really like Belvedere. I said, what's that? He said, oh, it's this community up being built in just outside of Charlottesville off Rio Road, and they have in there this sort of principle of connecting people with each other and with nature. And they have sidewalks, and they've got wide avenues, close-knit community idea with nature and trails.
But isn't that the thought process of certainly not all, but many suburban subdivisions, which is to have sidewalks, which is to have a little green space for everybody to walk their dogs and clean up the poop in one, you know, central area. So
that's absolutely true. I mean, that's why I'm sitting here saying to you, this is not really a unique principle, Belvedere. But what I liked about it is that the man behind the design of it, Bob Hauser, when I met with him, he said, you know what? What I saw happening to my kids is not what I had when I was a kid. When we used to play outside all the time, I bet you did too, Rick Moore and you, Jim Duncan. I mean, a lot of us used to just play outside in the woods or just play. We used to have humongous games of kick the can and things like that, not just really getting back to nature, but just being outside. And I think Bob Hauser explained to me that he didn't see that happen so much anymore, and he wanted to design a community that was, quote, get the kids off the couch and back to nature, outside, playing. And that's really what's happening at Belvedere right now. I mean, the hardest thing we have sometimes is getting our kids to come inside to go to bed. So it is not. I mean, that's what I question. That's one question I have for you too, Jim Duncan. I mean, don't you go around and see? You are out in the neighborhoods all the time. I think that there are a lot of neighborhoods out there that do have sidewalks and do want their children to be playing outside. So that's another question I have: is, like, how do we do this then? How do we get kids outside more? But I think it is a trend that kids are not playing as much as they used to outside.
No, and that's what we're seeing. In my experience, I'm seeing that a lot of my clients that are coming into the Charlottesville area, are one of the top concerns that they have, or questions or criteria, is how close is this house to a park or an outside area? And it's something that we really are sort of privileged and blessed to hear that we have so many parks and so many, you know, natural activities on the outside. But I think that what we're seeing also is that there's less play outside for a variety of reasons, but one is just concern about kids roaming too far from home. And that was, when I was a child, I grew up on a farm in Culpeper. That was really never a concern. And so we've seen a real shift in patterns of people wanting their kids to be, you know, 100 feet from home or 300 feet from home or within eyesight of home. So I think that Belvedere and, again, these other developments are encouraging that roaming mentality of kids and parents.
Let's back up a minute, because that conversation takes me to many sort of cultural things about the value of land and turning it into, you know, green open space rather than putting a house on it, and the cultural concern about the parent letting their child wander so far, not so much because it's much further to get to the green space, but because of the dangers that exist for the kids. And I don't want to jump into that yet, although it's important. But what I want to start with is sort of why there is the need. What is this? You're a nature-based education teacher, or at least that's what I wrote down. And some of the things that you pointed me to are more, they're medical, they're physical, they're neurological as to why we need this, rather than some sort of retro thinking about what it was like when I grew up and I want my kids to be the same way. And so I want to start with why it's important physically for the child, not because they're obese, not because they need better, you know, more friends, sort of sociologically. But a lot of this, a lot of what I read and a lot of what I gather that you believe is that it's physically important. You cannot raise a healthy child neurologically unless they have some time spent with nature. Is that true?
Well, I really think it comes down to what you want to define as a healthy child. So but instead of going there right away, I think I want to answer some of your questions about, okay, well, is this really good for children? Like, that's kind of what you're asking, like, why is it good for kids? And I think that's one of the mechanisms, like, what's the mechanism, what's the physiological mechanism? Why is this so important? And I could reel off some of the research that says that children really do greatly benefit from playing in nature. It encourages their imagination and their creativity. It fosters language and collaborative skills. It reduces or eliminates bullying.
Now, how is that? My vision is that there was always some bully in the neighborhood or on the school bus, and it didn't matter whether you were, I mean, in fact, you more likely to run into them if you were outside playing, you know, a game of, you said kick the can, but if you're playing some sort of, you know, neighborhood game, the bully, the biggest guy in the group, was going to come over and knock the crap out of you playing, you know, flag football or, you know, basketball or whatever.
Well, you know what? Researchers have found that's not really true. They've been observing children in nature for a long time. And I've found this to be true as well. Like, I would have kids in the classroom, and they'd be bumping into each other and scrapping with each other, and there'd be, you know, fights here and there. But when I get them outside, and the energy just goes, I mean, it comes way down, and they go off into the forest. And you know, granted, they're going to be playing some kind of games in the forest, but it just really calms kids down. So you're asking me, like, what's the mechanism? I can tell you what I think it is, but I go to these conferences, I ask the same question you're asking me, like, why does it work? And in my mind, I think that, for one thing, that you get a 365-degree, whatever, you get a surround sound, surround senses that come into your body. Like, this is the right brain. Like, for me, like, I'm a neuroscientist. I want to know, like, I have this big questioning mind, just like you do, Rick Moore. Like, what is it? What's going on here? How come these kids have all these benefits from playing outside? In my mind, I think it's because you're surrounded by your senses are enlivened. The right side of your brain is being, you know, picked up on, altered. And I think that has something to do with executive function in the front of the brain. That's the seat of before you head into the emotional centers of the brain. Well, that's Kate White's idea. I mean, I don't think there's been anything written about the mechanism. So you've just sort of hit on the central node question that I have it too, because there's no one who's going to wire up a kid when they go out into the natural world and see what really happens.
Give them a grant and someone will do it.
Well, I would love to be a part of that grant, because when I read the research is really amazing how it can create a better degree of focus and concentration. There's a lab out in the Midwest where they actually do a combination of these controlled studies where they'll take kids on walks versus kids that don't go on walks. And the kids that do go on walks have these higher degrees of being able to focus, lesser degrees of aggression, and they work with kids near Chicago in the projects, and they have found that kids that have even views of nature out their window can have greater degrees of concentration. So, and that was one of the selling points for Belvedere, because they were like, well, we've got nature views from every window, we've got green space 250 feet closest to every home. And when I first heard about Belvedere and I called them up from my perch up there in Vermont, and I said, you know, you guys have got a good product here. Why don't you combine it with the research? Because the research is pretty profound.
11:16 on the Wake Up Call, August 30th, 2009, talking with Jim Duncan, who's a realtor with Nest Realty, and Kate White, a neuroscientist, a nature-based education teacher, as we talk about healthy children and the need for nature to make them healthy. Kate, I see that there's a phone call coming in, so I don't want to go too deep here, but Hardwired to Connect is a website, or I guess a Google phrase that you sent me to, that I found to be really interesting. And everybody out there who's interested in the program should write it down, Hardwired to, T-O, Connect. But give us a little background on what that is.
Well, this was a study that I sort of stumbled across because I'm an attachment researcher working with children and relationships, really. I went to a seminar on the science of attachment with a man named Alan Shore, who's really changed the field of working with children. And he talked about this study, and it was published in 2002 with a bunch of researchers, 33 to be exact, pediatricians, neuroscientists, social workers, and the principal investigator was out of Dartmouth. And they were sort of looking into the general health, especially the psychological health and the spiritual health and the moral health of children. And what they came up with is that the children really need connections with other human beings. And they also need these connections, the connection to a moral and spiritual life. And so they did some digging up to try and see what are the conditions of children today. They found rises in health conditions like ADHD and of depression, of suicidal ideation. In part, that study is kind of depressing when you sort of look at trends amongst our children, according to these researchers. And they decided that what children really need are communities of people, regular people, not health practitioners per se, but it'd be great if there was a multi-generational approach to being with these children. Anybody could do it. And what it seemed to me after I read all of their data was that what they seemed to be saying is that these children need close-knit communities around them to help them feel better about themselves. And to me, why not just connect that community to nature? So that was really, the study is really extensive. And there is a website there that you can go to, Hardwired to Connect. And I would encourage anybody who really cares about children to really look at that study.
11:19 on the Wake Up Call.
Actually, I wanted to jump in on that because on the community aspect, it's something that I'm seeing, again, with more and more of my clients. The multi-generational component is something that is really impactful. A lot of people are considering, people in their 30s and 40s are looking at homes that are going to be available for them to have their mothers-in-law or their fathers-in-law or their parents move in with them. The ancillary apartments that we're seeing in some developments around the area are places where the kids can come and have their parents live with them. And I think that people are recognizing the value of the community of having not just them and their parents, but also their kids and their kids' kids interact with each other. And there's a community in Crozet, Old Trail, that is going to have an assisted living facility on site. And one of the concepts of that is because they want to have that multi-generational population out there so that people are interacting and they're sharing knowledge and they're building that community. So, and I don't know whether it's the recession or where we are in our cultural evolution, but people want to be tied into the community around them. We're seeing that both with the social networks and the in-real-life interactions and networking events and neighborhoods. So it's really a fascinating thing to watch and experience.
We are talking about healthy children and the need for nature to make them healthy. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly sunny today, highs in the low 80s. Mostly cloudy with a 20% chance of showers tonight. Lows 65 to 70, even lower and cooler in Richmond. Partly cloudy tomorrow, 30% chance of showers. 50% chance in Lynchburg and Richmond. Highs 70 to 75. Right now it's partly cloudy in much of the listening area. 79 in the valley, 77 in Lynchburg, 79 in Richmond, 78 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And WNRN wants to thank listeners like Ted Henneberry, Jack and Jane Bunting, Brenda Clement Jones, who supported us in the Spring Fun Drive, and because of people like them that you have the Wake-Up Call every Sunday. Also because of our program underwriters, like the ones you hear this hour, as well as Crutchfield and Atlas Comics. Stay tuned, tell a friend about the Wake Up Call and other programming you enjoy here on NRN, and be sure to support us in the upcoming Fun Drive this September. And let's thank Alt Energy for their support as well, designing and installing solar energy systems in Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Alt Energy Systems can pay for themselves and reduce your carbon footprint. More can be found online, altenergyincorporated.com. All right, back in action with Kate White and Jim Duncan as we talk about healthy children and the need for nature. We were talking about the close-knit, multi-generational communities. Jim, you mentioned how they're growing in the area. Kate, you mentioned the importance. Is this marketing more than anything else, though? Because, Jim, what I see, and I think we've talked about it when we were discussing real estate with you in previous programs, which is how much of this is because, oh, my healthy children, and how much of this is, darn, I'm going to have to take care of my parent, and I guess this is the best way to do it.
I think that's a good way to put it. I mean, it's a reality that parents are moving in with their children, and so I think that, you know, from a marketing spin perspective, it makes sense to put as positive a spin as possible on it. But I think it's more than marketing, in that people generally want to be around their kids and their parents, and they want their children to interact with their parents and really share that knowledge that comes along with, you know, having lived for 70, 80, 90. So it is marketing, but it's also just I perceive it to be a cultural reality, and that people really do want that, and they're looking for options. They're looking for options with from a housing perspective, where they can accommodate those needs and those wants. And it's never an easy decision either. It's something that people do struggle with, but frequently that it's a better option to have their parents living on site than paying sometimes exorbitant fees for an assisted living facility.
Kate, how do you take something such as healthy living for your child and teach it to a culture that has so many other things in mind? In this case, just this one focus on multi-generational living and the importance of it. And how do you teach a family to approach it from the family need that isn't financial?
Well, that's easy to do, actually.
Is it?
Well, from my perspective, it is. Because when you start with a baby, start with a developing human being, you start with a nervous system that's still so new, so ready, so fresh. Every baby needs a holding environment. That's something that we talk about in attachment. Babies like to be held, and that's part of how they grow. We grow in relationship. And I think that having extended families is, I mean, that's ancestral. We've been doing that for how many hundreds of years up until when? What is it about the United States? We're so nuclear. We're so independent. We can't reach out and have other people around our children. So that's in part what, when I talk about having people close by, is that babies need a holding environment. They like to be held. Families need a holding environment. They like to be held. And I don't see any reason why we can't have extended families. Like, who's out, who can hold the baby while the mom's taking a shower or cooking? I mean, this is just a natural, normal way that we've been. And it's not, it's also cultural. I mean, the United States has got their way of being. But, I mean, I can cite you other, lots of studies about how health can be increased looking at other cultures that have these extended families. So it's to me, it's just a question of how do we want to talk about it. And this is a radio show is a great way. The radio is an awesome way to talk about this kind of stuff.
Especially this particular program. Wake Up Call on Sunday. We are talking about healthy children and nature to make that happen. Jim Duncan, a realtor with Nest Realty. Kate White, nature-based education teacher, a neuroscientist here talking with us this morning. Phone lines are open, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. If you're listening a little further away than Charlottesville, Albemarle. Kate, I don't know if you're familiar with this book. A listener, Susan from Nelson, called in and is recommending Secret Teachings of Plants. Are you familiar with that book?
Yeah, I think so. That's written by a herbal medicine teacher. I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
I have Stephen Buhner.
Yeah, Buhner. Yeah, Stephen Buhner is an awesome teacher and an awesome. He's got a lot of knowledge about plants. I am familiar with that book. It's a great way to introduce children to the power of the natural world when you're talking about plants, and they're so easy to invoke the senses, like peppermint. Spearmint, or even like, okay, what's the most common plant out there? What do you see in the lawns? You know, dandelions, the power of the dandelion. As you know, so we can make medicine out of the dandelion, the history of the dandelion. The trees are another awesome way to teach people about the power of the natural world. And it's such a sensual place. It's also a playful place. Like, did you climb a tree when you were a kid, Rick? How about you, Jim? I mean,
quite a few.
See? I mean, some kids these days don't climb trees anymore. I mean, that's what I'm talking about.
But that's because there aren't any. And Jim, you know, I come back to this. Kate, I in no way, in any attempt, am trying to demean the topic because I find it fascinating. And the more research I did for this program today, the more caught up in it I got. But I also have this sort of cynical reality aspect to my personality. And so, Jim, I say, the value of the land is worth more sold as the house than it is with the trees on it and marketed as the park for the subdivision. Is that true or is that not true? If I need to look at it in a grander scheme over a longer period of time.
I think that that's been true for the last 8 to 10 years. But what I'm seeing now is that people are recognizing more that the place where they live is a home and not just a house. And that home component is not just the, you know, the four bedrooms and 2.5 baths or what have you, but it's what is around the home, what envelops the home environment. And so people are much more cognizant, and I'm finding more willing to pay if they can get a home that has, you know, nice amenities, et cetera, inside the house, but also what they're close to and what they're surrounded by. And if that's green space and trees, that's great, but it's also not just, you know, not just nature, but our new natural environment that's stuff in coffee shops and libraries and grocery stores. And that's sort of our, you know, our new American natural life is cafes and ways to interact with people. I think we were talking, or Kate was talking earlier, about connecting and being with other people. And so people are willing to pay for homes that have an ability to connect with those around them. In whatever way that is, whether it's, you know, climbing a tree or going to the park or meeting somebody at the coffee shop or the cafe. And so I think that we're seeing a shift, at least I'm seeing a shift in my business, to where people are wanting to interact and be engaged with their world around them rather than just living within the four walls of their home. So it's a cultural and a real estate shift that I think is happening. I think it's going to continue on for at least what I see as the foreseeable future.
11:30, as we talk about healthy children and nature. Support today brought to you by Sugar Snap Consignment in York Place downtown. And seems like a good tie-in here because they accept and offer gently used baby and kid items. such as outerwear, shoes, hats, crib bedding, maternity and nursing clothes. Kid-friendly play area available while you shop. You can become a fan of Sugar Snap on Facebook or Twitter. More info at sugarsnapconsignment.com. Kate, I want to go back to Belvedere for a moment. I believe we were talking early, you mentioned yourself as sort of the poster child for Belvedere. Tell me why, because then I have a follow-up question.
Okay. I hope it's not a trick question there, Rick Moore.
Of course.
Yeah, I am a really sort of walking embodiment of Belvedere. And you know, it's kind of scary. It's kind of synchronistic, I would say, because when they mentioned some of their values of close-knit communities and wide avenues, sidewalks, nature, they also have a component of well-being. They want to promote health activities outside, and that's what I'm about. So when I showed up, there was a lot of excitement. I also have a business, and I'd like to locate that business in their town center. So I bought their whole package. It was kind of interesting to me when I moved down here. I began to be labeled as a new urbanist, which I had never heard that word before. I feel like I do embody everything that they wanted to see in that community. So it really felt good on both sides when I showed up. What's your question now, Rick?
Well, I bring that in because we've discussed the importance of doing this. And we have discussed, Jim mentioned several other areas that are sort of, at least in some way, taking on this concept. But my understanding is that when Belvedere started, it was mentioned as affordable housing. And the great hours and depths of research that I did show that the housing, the home, to cost $400,000 or more. Incorrect, correct, problematic.
For better or worse, some of the property values in there have dropped, and the entry level properties there are relatively affordable.
Affordable for whom? I'm always interested in that. People say affordable, and I'm like, I can't buy any $250,000 home. I'm a single guy with no kids.
Well, there's a lot of opportunities to live in Belvedere. It's not just a $250,000 home. They just sold the land over there to build multifamily units, so now you can have an apartment over there if you want. I don't know how much those are going for. They have townhomes over there, and they have these great new city homes. If I had extra money, I would buy one of them. I mean, this really wonderfully, beautifully built homes, three bedrooms for $284,000. Like, what do you want for a new home now? Because that's a really reasonable price for an Earthcraft quality home in a good neighborhood just outside of Charlottesville.
And I asked that question for a couple reasons, but we go back to, actually, you know what, this is a great time to bring this up. One of the things that I found most entertaining about doing my research for this was this British, I called it a factoid, in the four generations coming down, So the great-grandfather, when he was, I believe, 8 years old, could travel 6 miles to go fishing. That was sort of his circle of play. And the grandfather could travel up to 1 mile, and I forget what he was going to do. And the mother was allowed to travel a half mile to go to the swimming pool. And then the current modern-day son was only allowed to walk to the end of the street. Before that was all his family allowed him to do. And so my vision of Belvedere, to allow all these children out to play, is a gated community. Who else allows their children? And I know that it's not, but it seems to be some sort of, it's an entirely different mindset. It's not just reading about, oh, this would be healthy for my child. Let's go move. And now I'm going to let my child wander through the woods, unwatched, you know, possibly without shouting distance from me. And so I can afford the home. I would like to do this. What makes me change my fear or remove my fear of letting my child walk out of my yard where I can no longer shout for them, it's time to come in, stop playing?
Well, that's a really good question. You've touched on a couple of really big questions, actually, Rick. It's not this whole idea of the free-ranging child, free-range childhoods. And actually, there's a movement behind this. It is British, actually. There's a man over there named Tim Gill who's written a book called Risk of Fear. I can't remember the title of the book, but it's about, you know, we're living in a risk-averse society. We're afraid to let our kids wander.
It's the helicopter parent. Is that the right term?
Hovering over our kids. Well, there are some realities, and I actually have, when I go around and I talk with teachers and I talk with parents about my work, there is quite a list of impediments to letting kids play outside. And one of them is this culture of fear, stranger danger, fear of traffic. So there are an adult attitudes like, well, what is my neighbor going to think of me if I let my kid go outside? And like right now, there's this big fight over in the Netherlands about these parents that want to let their 13-year-old sail around the world by herself. I think there are these things that touch into ourselves at our deepest core. Like I feel vulnerable with my children out in the world too. I mean, we have to really find a way to be in balance. And that's sort of what I'm looking for. And there are ways that we can change the way we think, but baby steps. We can do it baby steps. One of the ways I want to do it is playing outside with them myself. I mean, I encourage parents to get outside themselves with their kids. It's a part of the whole approach. You can't just let your kid out if you don't really believe in it yourself.
But the alternate universe me is married, and we both have jobs, and you know, we're already sending our child to, you know, after school childcare, or he's old enough to be a key kid. What do they call him?
Latchkey kid.
Yeah, that's how much I know my alternate universe child. I don't even know what that is. So I don't have the opportunity to play with them, because when I come home, now it's time to have dinner, where, of course, we share the table together and talk about our day. Because we are, you know, a good family with good intentions. So, but I can't meet that one.
You mean letting your kid outside to play?
Of playing with them. So, because you said baby steps, so it's, okay, I can't let them roam free yet, but I can roam in the yard with them. Maybe I'm playing with them, maybe I'm just outside doing my work where I can be within visual and audio closeness.
Well, you can take your kids on the weekend to do walks. You can find free time to do nature-based activities with them. Charlottesville's great for that, right?
That's what I want to hear. I want you to help me as the parent who's fighting you with all these detrimental reasons why I can't do it. I want you to provide me with the options I'm too blind to see to take my baby steps.
I think that one way to do that is to look at the resources that we have here. I mean, we have the Ivy Creek Natural Area, we have Beaver Creek Park, we have the Shenandoah National Park, Blue Ridge Parkway. I mean, the list is not quite endless, but it's extensive.
And some of those are free.
And many of those are free, if not all of them. In Crozet, the Mint Springs Park, and it's just the trail system. You know, the Ravana Trail in around the city of Charlottesville. I mean, the options are there, and I find that, you know, living here for 20-some-odd years, they become invisible unless you seek them out, because they are in many ways integrated into how we live. And so if you don't pay attention to what's around you, you might lose sight of the fact that we have a pretty remarkable park system. I mean, there are two new parks coming online in the northern part of the county. So things are happening every day that you have the option to go outside. I'm a parent. I've got two kids and a wife, and it's hard to make the time. And so I think that part of it is making that choice and that dedication to spend time with the kids and do, you know, and then the second part of that is to do it outside. So we're probably anywhere within the county of Albemarle, you're less than 20 minutes away from a park. So I think that with that in mind, seek out the options to spend time with the kids in the outside environment.
11:40 here on the Wake Up Call with Kate White and Jim Duncan, as we talk about healthy children and how to help them be healthy with nature.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Scientists and historians have long wondered how Meriwether Lewis died. Should the Charlottesville area native and leader of the Lewis and Clark expedition be exhumed? Would it matter? Would it help? Should some questions go unanswered? A parent and professor explores his son's autism through sound and music and has his play accepted into the prestigious New York Musical Theater Festival. And there are more things in the water to worry about than the sharks. Read all about them in this week's issue. The Hook. No membership card needed. Let's thank Blue Ridge Graphics for allowing us to be on the air today. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom t-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. And as we wind down the hour, Drew Thompson will be here next at noon for Les Temps Perdue. If French isn't your thing at the station, that means the time's gone by, and that's 80s and 90s alternative music. Tune in for it next. Les Temps Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music. Here's a WNRN studio instant message. Please talk about Last Child in the Woods. And I'm thinking that that's a book.
Yeah, that's a book. Written by Richard Louv and L-O-U-V. And Richard Louv is a journalist, or he was. Now he's a famous guy going around talking about Last Child in the Woods. And he is a good guy. I found stuff written by him even before he wrote that book. He was tracking this idea that the kids are not playing enough outside. So he went around and he actually collected the research, which is something I've been trying to do. It was hard to find data about how play in nature is good for your kids until he wrote that book, which is just really an awesome book. And he coined this phrase, nature deficit disorder. And some of the research does point out...
Say that again?
Nature deficit disorder.
Nature deficit disorder.
Yeah.
That's clever.
I mean, kids just don't know about the natural world anymore. I mean, that's what he found out. And that's what, as nature-based educators, we find that out too, that the kids don't know their birds in their neighborhood or their trees or their plants. And he pointed out that how if you do get outside in nature, based on the research, it will increase your health. So that book's all about that and about programs. And it's really been fundamental in the No Child Left Inside Act, which is actually some legislation that's before Congress, about mandating outdoor play for children and actually providing funds for now, public schools.
How do you do that? How do you mandate outdoor play? I mean, when I get home, isn't the child mine again? When the child comes home, how can you make my child play outside?
No, it's not about you, the parent. It's for public schools. It's for public schools. And it's giving them funds so that they can expand their educational programs. And there's a lot of really good programs out there called place-based education that shows public school teachers how to integrate using the natural world into their lessons, literature, science, physics. They use gardening, math. Math is an excellent way to integrate nature into your education. So there's that book, Last Child in the Woods, is really an amazing compilation of data and research and storytelling.
Kate, you're a neuroscientist, so what are some of the neurological ways that children, if any, suffer by not being outside, by not having the relationship, the connection with nature?
Well, first let me just say I'm not a trained neuroscientist. I'm just passionate about the brain.
And I'm not a trained radio guy either, and that shows every week.
Well, just so the public out there knows, I don't have those initials after my name, but I am passionate about the brain and the nervous system. And what they've found is that this attention deficit disorder can be helped and improved the more children get outside to play. So that's one of the ways that they've found that nature can help your developing nervous system or even your nervous system as an adult. Is that what you're looking for, Rick?
Yeah, because You know, we talk about, and there's a lot of, and I come back to this phrase, which I've used, seems like I've used it several times in the last month or two, Eastern medicine. A lot of the reading that I did, the phrase slowing down was used multiple times in many different articles. Getting back to nature. And it, to me, it just brings up this vision of, you know, the Asian, you know, herbal medicine. We talked about herbal medicine earlier. And I just have this, the vision of the Asian doctor, the Asian isn't right, the Eastern medicine doctor telling me that I should take these herbs, I should slow down what I do. And hopefully I haven't bothered anybody or upset anybody with that horrible stereotyping. But again, I come back to this. That's the way our culture moves too quickly. We need to slow down. We need to pay more attention to our natural settings. But it's just some people saying they don't like the way we do things. Where are the statistics that say, and not even necessarily the numbers, but just what says, it's not just the way you do it that I don't like. It's this is how it affects your child, because as you have said several times, the way to attack someone to get them to change is to say, this is healthier for your child. Do it this way. Think of it in this manner, because everyone wants their child to be raised in the safest, healthiest manner possible.
Well, first of all, I would never attack somebody with this information.
Again, I just had a big stream of poor word choice there. Please, let's overlook it if we can.
Okay. All right, well, I think one thing I'd like people to take in is this idea of balance. Like this is where I deviate from a lot of people in my field. Because I don't like the way we put nature on one side and technology on the other. Our world is going very fast. I think it's true. We're inundated with information all the time. And now we're texting in our cars and we're doing all these multitasking.
During our radio program, Jim Duncan.
It's just Twitter. It's okay.
I'm
very, very connected. It's hard to disconnect.
Yes, he is a very connected guy. It's fun to follow him around on Twitter. So we live in this world that's very fast. Very fast, and we're speeding up. We're going so much faster, and I'm imagining by the time my kids are grown, we're going to have all kinds of new gizmos to try and make our lives better. But the truth of it is that this information is coming at us with a high speed, and the nervous system can only go so fast. And I think we're trying to catch up. We're trying to adapt, and we're very adaptable. We're very resilient. We're an awesome species, really. We're so smart. But if you look at some of the things that are happening to young children, the rates of depression, the rates of ADHD, suicidal ideation, alcohol abuse, I mean, these are all things that are in that study hardwired to connect. And the whole notion also, like I'm a nervous system specialist. When you're with a baby, you slow down, you go at their rate. You go at their rate, and they can take things in, or they get overwhelmed. And I think a lot of times we're operating on overwhelm as a species.
How does nature help you slow down?
Well, just go outside. I mean, it slows a lot of people down. If you connect with the natural world, you know, the trees don't go very fast. You know, the wind can go quite fast, but the wind can also go quite slow. I mean, there's variations in the natural world, and I don't know why it is so that when we get outside, we slow down and we connect and we feel better. That's, I know some of the physiological reasons why, but I think that we have inside of us this innate ability to connect to the natural world that's ancestral, that's been there for a long time. And when we step outside and we connect with nature, we awaken all that quite easily.
11:50 on the wake up call, Kate White. A nature-based education teacher at Jim Duncan, a local realtor, as we talk about healthy children and the need for nature for themselves, for our community. Let me give a shout out to Been Around Tattoos for their support today. You can find them in downtown Waynesboro, featuring male and female tattoo artists. Been Around Tattoos has thousands of designs available and can create work from a design that you provide. Been Around Tattoos in downtown Waynesboro or here in Charlottesville, 701 West Main Street. For more information online, beenaroundtattoos.com. Here's something interesting. 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. We got a call from Allie in Belvedere. Called to advocate for nature-based daycare, such as Bunny Gardens, which I guess is in Belvedere.
I don't know about bunny gardens.
So I'm assuming that that's not a method, that's a business. So instead of talking about bunny gardens, the business, what is nature-based daycare?
Well, I'll just back up a little bit and talk about nature-based kindergartens.
Okay.
Because they're all over Europe, and the kindergartens were the model for some of the nature-based programs I ran when I lived in Vermont. I had a whole school that I created around the natural world. And it's quite easy to create a program that where children can play outside. There are like 500 of these kindergartens now in Denmark and in Sweden and in other countries in Europe. And the basis is that you just play outside all day long. And they can care for the children out there. Sometimes they even sleep in beds that are outside, and I don't know about any that are here in Charlottesville, so I'm thrilled to hear about one. But at the same time, when I created a daycare up in Bethesda, where I used to live before I moved to Vermont, we were heavily regulated, which I think is one of the parts that's difficult to run nature-based programs in the United States, is that I had to get permission from the parents for the kids to get their feet wet in the creek. I mean, there's just a lot of litigation out there.
Are there peanuts in the creek? You have to worry about that? By the way, we will be doing a food allergy show in the future. seriously, you have to get permission for the child to get their feet wet.
Yes, we had I think that's one of the things that comes up at a lot of the teacher trainings that I do, is that when people come and they want to start nature-based programs, they ask questions about litigation. Having children exposed to the natural world brings up ideas of what's dangerous out there. And so it would be great if we could find ways to get people to relax around what's possible and what's out there. So a little bit. I do get quite a lot of questions about insurance and litigation possibilities when I go around and I teach.
My alternate reality parental self finds that to be incredibly ridiculous. Again, 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS, 1154 on the program. Kate White and Jim Duncan here. Jim, you mentioned several subdivisions, I guess, or communities that are being put together on a similar model as Belvedere.
Right.
Correct?
I did. Well, Farm Colony is one in Greene County that has been there for years, and I have a friend who lives out there, and actually he put on Facebook this morning a picture of waking up with the goats. It's a working farm where people interact with, they do interact with nature because they're working a farm. And in Belvedere, and there's one in Southern Albemarle, Bundoran Farm, which, full disclosure, my firm is marketing, where that's 2,300 acres, and you have access to all of that, mountains and trails and hiking and fishing and everything. And that development is one that's being formed in a very similar way in some respects to Belvedere, in that they're trying to integrate nature into how people live rather than explicitly exclude it.
Is it going to work, though? Because my understanding is that Belvedere, which should have been completed or at least much further along than it is, which much, much higher completed percentage than it is, many say, is not working.
I'll jump in on that. I think it is working. It's just a lot slower than was anticipated.
Is that because of economic times, or is that because of a much lower percentage of interest than was originally anticipated?
I think it's tied almost directly in an isolated way to the recession and to where we are. I mean, I think Again, a lot of my clients over the years have expressed a great interest in Belvedere, but they've been, in some ways, they've been fearful of what might happen, and in some ways, they just have, you know, for whatever reason, they haven't purchased anything at all. But I don't think that it's tied to anything that Belvedere has done specifically. I think it's more a general malaise, if you will, in the real estate market in Charlottesville and Albemarle and other areas.
Well,
so
yeah, I want to jump in on that, too. I think Belvedere is doing excellent, given the recession. I think over the winter we sold 10 or 12 houses, and now we're on a rate, according to Bob Hauser, of closing one a week. I mean, I just feel like Belvedere is doing great. I think it's one of the better developments that's actually selling new homes in the Charlottesville area. And yeah, it's not as far along as we want. What I said to you before, I mean, this is not yet. I mean, I think we have every intention of doing the best we can with what's going on in the recession and the economy.
This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. Let's take this call because I think we have Matt from Belvedere. Hey, Matt. All right. I don't know what happened there because I can see all the buttons pushed properly.
Hello.
Matt. Hey.
Hello.
Yes, you're here with me. Are we here with you?
I'm with you. Hey, I live in a farm colony up in Greene County.
All right.
And it is it's a model. It's an older development. It was built in 76 or developed in 76. And about 24 houses are done out of 48 lots. So it's certainly not built out. But it's built around this idea that we've got nature here. We should live in harmony with it. We should have gardens that are collective with all the people here. We have cattle. So we know where our beef is coming from if we choose to to purchase the beef. We've got eggs that are local that actually taste good. It's a wonderful community.
Hey, man. Well, thank you so much. Good luck with that. And I hope it does everything that you wish for.
Well, thanks. I'm not the developer. I just live here.
And you know what? And my guess is those are the people who actually make it to what it is.
And one thing I wanted to throw out there as well, as I'm seeing in real estate, is more gardens and more yards that I'm going to. I mean, there are more local gardens and people's their own yards, but also I'm seeing that some community organic gardens are popping up here and there, and people are actually asking for it. So people, again, I look at it as beyond more just nature as a whole, but also just producing your own food and just a return to, I don't know, traditional values, if you will. So people do want to have stuff in their yards that they control and that they interact.
Kate, we just got about 60 seconds left. So what's Charlottesville's potential in making this happen for the community as a whole? I mean, people who, not just people who live in Belvedere, but I think it should and needs to carry over to all the kids, right?
Oh, yeah. I think there's tremendous opportunity here. Like just the other day, I was reading in the newspaper about this McIntyre Botanical Garden movement. I really want to encourage that, because that would be a place definitely where I would like to show up and teach, show up and do storytelling and get people to know the plants better. And the Charlottesville region is rich in history, rich in plant life and diversity. That Rivanna Trail, that Rivanna River going around it, some amazing parks here, and not to mention, you know, Thomas Jefferson and the Monticello and just the inherent beauty that's here. So I really want to encourage Charlottesville to get out into the natural world. And I think if I have just a few more seconds, I want to say that mentoring, being a mentor is really, really important, being there for your kids. Because if a child is to keep alive his inborn sense of wonder, he needs the companionship of at least one adult who can share it and rediscover it with him, with the joy and the excitement and the mystery of the world that we live in. And we can have a big impact on a child, just being outside with him, digging, looking, smelling, touching, rolling around, climbing, and encouraging.
All right. Well, thanks for a really interesting topic today.
Thanks, Rick.
I got a lot out of that, and I hope everyone listening did too. Kate White and Jim Duncan. Jim, I'm sure you'll have this on your website.
I'll be writing a show notes story that where I also, not just show notes from the show, but also I'm going to have some neighborhoods in the area that I perceive to be particularly attuned to nature.
And we'll have the podcast information up later today, and we'll put links towards Kate and her suggestions as well. Thank you so much.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.